Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for being here with us on the Sunday morning wake-up call. This is 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Again, Sunday 9/11. I think we all know what that means. We've been told about it. We've been talking about it. We've been looking ahead to it. Some people with hands raised, hands on our hearts. Some with heads down. I don't know what to do about this day. I'm sort of beleaguered. I'm going to say something wrong during this hour, so forgive me. It's a difficult day to do a show, and that's hardly the worst thing that has happened to me on Sunday 9/11 compared to others. ...2,996 people killed today in the events that those of us think of related to 9/11, 2001. Both of the towers in New York City collapsed. 110-story towers. American Airlines flight 11 hit the North Tower. United Airlines Flight 175 hit the South Tower. American Flight 77 hit the Pentagon. United Airlines Flight 93 crashed outside of Shanksville, Pennsylvania. I don't know. There's so many people today who grieve, and there's others who look forward to this as a day of patriotism. We're going to spend the hour talking to some folks about their stories. I hope that people will call in today throughout the hour. We're going to call some folks. Dan, why don't you go ahead and call our first, we're going to call out as well. Throughout the hour, we're going to call some folks. There's so many people, I have a story that I'll tell a little later. But people, you know, if you go to Facebook and see their posts, if you talk to old friends and are reminded of their stories. Happiness for those who survived. Reminders of those who grieve. It's a difficult day in a variety of ways. Others who have nothing to do. I heard a story last night about a couple who this was their, or this is their anniversary. This is their anniversary date. And obviously what's happened back in 2001 now overwhelms their anniversary date. So hope you listen here on the Sunday morning wake-up call with us. This is 9/11 and the reminder of what we're here for. We want to talk with folks about where you were, what you did, how you watched the news, and then I want to find out a little bit about how it's changed your life today with what you do. Our first guest today, John. John, are you with me?
I'm here. Yep. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, John. John and family in New York City. John, tell me your story about 9/11, 2001.
All right. I'm going to start by just telling you just a little bit of background about myself. I grew up in the New York area. I was born on Staten Island. And when I was a boy, my dad used to commute by the Staten Island Ferry into Lower Manhattan. And at times we would drop him off or pick him up there, and we could see across the harbor those buildings going up. And I remember, you know, I was probably about 8 when they were finished and going up the windows of the world and, you know, just having the breath taken out of me from just the spectacular view. And honestly, I've always had a little aversion to heights, and the vertigo was outrageous. But you know, I watched those buildings go up and went there on school trips and, you know, visited them often when I was young. So they're kind of part of my, you know, personal background. You know, and I know that they were often criticized by professional, you know, for us, they were just spectacular. And there are so many memorable things about them. But anyway, so I just, you know, on 9/11, I was working, and at that time was probably had a New York Times open on a web browser. Glance at the news every so often while I was at work, and I think I first saw the news about it there, and, you know, people in the office started mumbling about it, and there was some just sort of a little roar going up around the office, and I called Gordon Walker, who was running for school board at the time. I was managing his campaign, and there was a candidates forum scheduled for that night, and I was talking to him about whether he thought that was about that, and he was watching CNN in his office while we were talking. And, you know, at that time we didn't know what had happened with the first plane and whether it had been an accident. You know, we thought it was likely an accident, and then, you know, he was watching on CNN and said, you know, oh my God, you know, he saw it live, you know, a plane has hit the other tower. And when that happened, we realized, you know, this wasn't an accident. This was deliberate. Our, you know, I guess, you know, we sort of signed off, and our bosses, you know, sent us an email and said, you know, there's something going on. We think everyone should, you know, we're going to close the office. Everyone should go home and be with your family. So I left, and I went to the daycare center where my daughter Maggie was, and she was 2.5 or so at the time, picked her up and brought her home. And I guess one other thing before I left the office, I got a panic call from my mom, and it turned out that my brother Jim had a morning flight, 8 a.m. flight out of New York Kennedy Airport, and he and his wife were in the air, and, you know, we had no idea about their safety. My mom was, of course, panicked that he could have been, you know, the plane he was on could have been hijacked. There was speculation that the Air Force was going to shoot down planes that weren't, you know, responding to controllers. And, you know, it was just a frightful time not knowing what was going on. Eventually, you know, did hear from him that he was safe, his plane. They actually, as they were leaving New York, they saw fire coming from, smoke coming from the first tower that had been hit. And, you know, they had no idea of the magnitude of what had happened. But as they were flying, I guess the stewardess had started their beverage service, and then they just kind of abruptly stopped. And, sort of created a barricade in the front of the cabin using the beverage cart, and they didn't tell them anything, but they just, they kind of went down in lockdown mode, and they ended up being diverted to Detroit. So he ended up, he was flying to Denver, but he ended up in Detroit, had to rent a car and drive back to New York. But, you know, that was the least of his problems. He was safe, but we all had, some moments there where we didn't know their whereabouts or whether they were safe and what was going on. And, just the recollection I have of the day was, spending the day having a lot of phone calls with family and friends. I believe you and I spoke, Rick, about your friend Greg and his whereabouts. And
that
was in question at the time.
I haven't told that story yet, but I'll tell it shortly.
I'll leave that story for you. But I just, it was just talking to people and, I think we spent the whole afternoon just sitting in front of the TV and just, trying to make sense of what the hell was happening. And, my ex-wife was pregnant at the time. My daughter Rosie was born 4 months after 9/11. And, there we are with a young child and a child on the way. And we're just wondering, what is this world that, So, anyway, sorry, getting choked up surprisingly. So I guess it's, it was 15 years ago, but still it was, scary time.
John, as we look back on 9/11, and it's 11/11 here, and it's not that long in the time period that everyone's watching the news and the towers have collapsed, and certainly the majority of America is now watching the news. How has your life changed in terms of your daily life? And I'm not talking about your children being born. I'm talking about whether it's, your job. Have the events of 9/11 changed the security at work? Has it changed the way you do things on a daily basis in terms of the routines that you take out of safety for your family or anything like that because of what happened then?
I have to say that I wouldn't be honest to say that it's had a major impact on my daily life, at least that I'm aware of. I mean, obviously, the most noticeable thing is traveling, for business and security and airports and all of that. Major is that, just flying has become much less enjoyable because of what happened. I'm hard pressed to tie any specific changes. But the only thing I can say that I remember about that day and that time, besides, sort of the horror of the actual events and the towers coming down, was in the couple of days afterward, there was just an unbelievable spirit of community that had really never experienced anything like that. I mean, you would just driving down the road, you'd see somebody have an improvised 9/11 memorial on their car, and you could just give people a thumbs up. Just everybody just, I don't know, people really came together in a really impressive way. It was just something just, it just brought out the best in people. And I think maybe there's been a lesson for me in that you know, most people are decent, and in hard times, actually, you know, hard times can bring out the best in people. And I really saw that in that time, and that's kind of stayed with me, kind of despite the terrible tragedy. You know, I've tried to hold on to kind of a hopefulness about, you know, ordinary people.
John, thanks so much for your time.
You got it. All right. Thanks, Rick.
All right.
Bye.
All right, so we start our day talking with John about 9/11, a young child on the day, a young child on the way, his brother in the air, circling or traveling past the North Tower, burning on 9/11. We are talking about 9/11, looking back. What was happening in your life? You're welcome to call up and talk with us. We'll be also making some calls out to folks today, some planned calls out. But we'd love to have your call, 434-284-9470. Dan's here to help get you through on the air. That's 434-284-9470. Give us a call. Well, let's hear your message. We are talking about 9/11 here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Hi, Rick Moore here, WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. It is Sunday, and it's 9/11. So we're looking back on 9/11. Where were you? What were you doing on that day? How did you take the news? How did you watch the news? You've already talked to John. We'd love to talk to you. Give us a call, 434-284-9470. Ring us up. Line should be open. John mentioned my friend Greg. Greg doesn't like to talk, certainly not publicly, if you're a friend, certainly a family member. He'll talk about his story. Greg and I went to school together. I'll share. I don't think he'll mind, at least not too much. But Greg and I went to school together, and we vacationed together for several decades. And Greg worked in the South Tower and was nearly at work when the plane hit the North Tower, American Airlines Flight 11 hit the North Tower, and his co-worker, who he was walking in with, not quite at the building, made the sobering decision to not go inside, not go up to work. And so they turned around, and I don't know where they were going to go. But it wasn't, see if I can do this math in my head, 14 plus 3, 17 minutes later, that the plane, United Flight 175, hit the South Tower, where they would have been at work. And then, of course, the South Tower was the first tower to collapse. He doesn't, again, he doesn't share that story publicly, really. I've asked him, I guess I 9/11 fell on a Sunday 5 years ago, I'll say. I may not be right calendar-wise. And I asked him to participate on the show at Wake Up Call 1.0, version 1.0, and he politely declined. And And I asked him last night if he would, we could call him, and he again politely declined. And like so many others who were in Manhattan, once the buildings collapsed, had to walk miles, dozens and dozens of blocks out of the way to get out of the city to get back home. And of course, there was no cell service. And everyone, family members and friends who knew where he worked, who knew where everybody worked. I mean, the buildings employed thousands of people. And as John mentioned, he knew where Greg worked. And we spoke. He asked if I knew if Greg was okay. I was at work when this happened, and it just so happened I had some little camping TV in the trunk of my car with a little TV screen that's probably not a 3 or 4 inch screen. And I went out and brought it inside and plugged it in and watched the events unfold, and then sometime early afternoon I couldn't take it anymore and went home. And I knew not to call his family, because I knew if I hadn't heard from him, his family wasn't going to do any good to call his family. I was another ring away, despite how close we were. You're going to call your family first. And it took a while. I think I finally heard from him at, 9 or 10 o'clock at night. And that's me. I'm hundreds of miles away from New York City and the Pentagon and Shanksville with... And that's the closest person that I have related to anything that happened on 9/11. And he survived. And he's chosen to take another path in life, where he's selected another career, which now includes being a volunteer fireman. And so it's hard for me to process the thousands of people who are more directly involved, who are more painfully involved in the things that happened on 9/11. His changes seem to be for the better, at least in those ways. Him choosing to become a volunteer fireman was obviously out of some sort of thank you that he felt and wished for the work that was done. But he still chooses not to tell his story. And I think that there's something there that goes along with the pain that goes with that. All right, let's make our next call out. We're going to speak with Kathy Hinchy. Kathy, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Kathy Hinchy is a school teacher in the state of Virginia. Kathy, so let's talk about your day on 9/11. Tell me about where were you and your view of the day?
Well, I was teaching first grade, and it was the time the boys and girls were out of the room because they were doing their resource, which is where they go to PE or music or art, and my students were in PE. And I happened to walk down to the cafeteria to get a glass of or a cup of ice for water. And one of the cafeteria workers happened to say, "Have you heard?" And I said, "Have I heard what?" I was expecting to hear some school gossip. And she said that an airplane had flown into a skyscraper up in New York and that I should turn my television on because we all had TVs in the room. So I walked back to my classroom, and since my kids were not in the room, I was able to turn on the television and see the news and to see what's happening. And at that point, the towers hadn't fallen yet. I didn't have to pick my kids up until 9:10 that day. And so I'm standing there and I'm watching and I'm realizing I'm beginning to realize what's happening. But I had to turn the television off because I had to go get my students. But on my way down to get my students, I told one of the other teachers that I had passed what had happened. And of course, she was as shocked as I was. But we were in a place where we couldn't get any information because we could not turn the TV on, obviously. And so it was just sort of like we had these little snippets of facts, but we still didn't have the whole scope of what was happening. And so I brought my kids back to the room, and I would say within an hour, we began to get a sense of how large of a scope this was because parents started showing up to pick up kids. And, I mean, large amounts of parents in this pure panic. And we had a lot of students whose parents were stationed on a Army base that's here, and our school was also within walking distance of the largest shipyard here on the East Coast. And so there was this fear from the parents that we didn't know what was going to happen, but they did not want their kids near the shipyard. And of course, the people who were stationed on the Army base had a lot more information about what was happening, and they were gathering their children because they didn't know if their moms and dads were going to be deployed immediately. But I didn't fully understand what was happening until I got home that afternoon and was able to watch the news.
Did you have any kids at the time yourself?
No, I did not have any personal children. And I now that I'm able to look back, I'm almost thankful that I didn't, because I'm not sure how that conversation would have happened. It was a difficult enough conversation with children the days after. That's one of the things that I remember. I got very knowledgeable about children's psyche, because one of the things that I learned very quickly was that as adults, we were able to process the fact that those events weren't happening over and over and over, even though the news was showing them over and over and over. But small children, you know, we're talking about 6 and 7 year olds, when they were seeing those images on the TV, because you couldn't get away from them during that time, they process that as happened every time the plane flew into the tower and they saw that on TV. That was being processed as that act happening every single time. And so that was one of the things we learned very quickly, is that we had to help kids process what was happening.
You mean happening afresh? It's not one plane or not two planes, but every time they see it, it's another plane,
yes,
a second plane,
yes,
and then a third,
yes,
plane, and then a fourth plane?
Yes, because the news, I mean, if you'll remember, the news just kept showing it again and again and again. And, you know, they, young children weren't able to process the fact that that was just a replay of an event that had happened, you know, that morning or the day before or 2 days before. They processed that as happening every single time, and it was very frightening for a lot of kids. They did not understand what to do with that information. And so as teachers, and I think I can speak for the whole group of people who were educators at the time, we had to get very smart very quickly about how to help kids process that. And I can only really equate it to probably maybe when John F. Kennedy was shot, and how, you know, that news came through, you know, during the school day, and teachers sort of had to help kids process it. But of course, I wasn't alive then, so this was the first time that I had to do that, because I wasn't a teacher in the classroom when the space shuttle exploded, but that happened after the school day was over. That was like at 3:30 in the afternoon. This happened in the middle of the school day, and then, you know, of course, kids came back to school the next day, and we're there to help them process that.
Kathy, again, we're talking with Kathy Hinchy. She's a teacher in the state of Virginia, about what she was doing on 9/11. I want to ask you about if anything that happened on 9/11 has changed your job now, and whether it was personal or whether the way the school runs, whether it's security at the doors or anything like that?
Well, yes, it has. The first thing that comes to mind is that there is a day now, it's called Constitution Day, where everyone in the nation, not just Virginia, is expected to teach about the Constitution. And that was an act that was brought to Congress after 9/11. I want to say it was 2003 or 2004. And I'm pretty sure that that came about because of this feeling of, you know, a United States of America, and how important it is to remember where we come from. So that's one way that I feel like every school child has been impacted by what happened. But also with security, you know, and there's been lots of things that have caused that. We can't attribute it all to 9/11, because we know of school shootings and those kinds of things that seem to be much more prevalent. But, you know, students are not accessible to parents now. I'm sure anyone out there who has tried to go to a school and walk their child to class, or, you know, just walk the building, that doesn't happen anymore. Doors are kept locked. You are buzzed in. You have to announce who you are. You are immediately to report to the office. We have a documented system of who you are, why you're there. If you are allowed to go down to the classroom, you have on an identifying sticker or pass or however your system is set up, but so that everyone else in the building knows that you're a visitor. You just don't walk into schools anymore and go about your business and eat lunch with your kids. You are, it's much more, the security is much tighter these days.
All right, Kathy, thank you so much for being with us today.
All right, thank you.
Again, this is a Sunday morning wake-up call. We are talking about 9/11. Where were you, and how has it impacted your how has it impacted your life then and now? And here we are, 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Doesn't matter whether you're progressive or not to talk about 9/11. Sad tone, patriotic tone, all those tones seem to fit today. 9:42, the FAA grounded all civilian flights immediately. International civilian flights were turned back or directed to Canada or Mexico. Jeff Leonard was just telling me about his flight. We'll get him in here in just a little bit. I've got Jody Power on the line. Jody, how are you?
Yes, I'm fine. I'm fine. Thanks.
Thanks for being with us. So, Jody, tell us about your day on 9/11 of 2001.
Well, like many others, I went to work as usual, and I worked for the Commonwealth of Virginia, was a state agency, and suddenly get word, you know, this was pre-TV, pre-cell phones, and where you had smartphones and learned about information that way. But one of the staff in my department always has a radio on and listens to that while she works. And she came in with, you know, kind of bug eyes saying, I just heard on the radio that a plane hit, you know, the World Trade Center building. And, of course, everybody stopped. You can't believe it. You talk a little bit. You kind of go back to what you're trying to do. And then we got wind shortly thereafter of the second plane hitting the second building, and then everything just turned different. Everybody in the agency, we were trying to find a TV to look at and that sort of thing, and everybody was stunned and awe, you know, like, and just completely stymied in terms of what to do. Immediate reactions were, did you know anybody? Who do you need to try to get in contact with? And that sort of thing. And I mean, my response was trying to get a hold of my family. Because when things like that happen, it sort of undermines everything that you are and what you think is sacred and a solid foundation and will always be there. The reality of that not being true is, kind of put in your face in the wake of an event like that. I was trying to remember exactly the timing on things for that day, but I do recall the state closed early. I can't remember if the schools did as well, but I do recall going to get my children, one of them age 3 from preschool and one of them in Chesterfield County. Either the schools closed early or they had very liberal come get your kid, you know, no questions asked. And you just wanted to get with your family and hug them and get in touch with folks. That's my memory of that day. And, of course, then watching all the footage for the rest of the day, the evening, like everyone else, just mouth open and just can't believe that this happened. You know, the United States of America, and it was just a like everyone else, you just remember that the feeling, what you were doing. It's easy to conjure up all those emotions all over again.
We were just talking with a school teacher of young kids, and she made mention of the difficulty in getting those kids to understand, because you couldn't avoid the imagery and the video on all the news, that for those kids, every time the plane hit the building, it was a repeat. It wasn't another plane hitting the building. And trying to, you know, keep the kids away from the imagery as best possible. What did you do for your kids? You said you had a 3-year-old and then I guess an older child said going to the school system. So what did you do as a parent in trying with your kids during that time period?
Well, it was a challenge because as an adult, you're wanting to find out all the information, and we're accustomed to having the news on every night, you know, dinner and thereafter. So it was something we had to make a conscious decision to limit the TV exposure for our kids. You know, my son was 3 at the time, and that was a little young, and he wasn't necessarily paying attention to the TV when it was on anyway. But with a 7-year-old, that was a harder thing. And of course, in school, I mean, they knew of it. They talked of it a little bit and tried to do it in a non-threatening and non-scary way, just as we did at home. You know, say what happened, but try not to let them see that image over and over again. You know, you talk about it in terms of, you know, good and evil in the world, and some things happen and you don't understand, you know, why, but you find out later. Unfortunately, my situation was a little perhaps unusual. My 7-year-old and I experienced an incident together, unfortunately, 5 years earlier. It was the week of Thanksgiving. She and I were coming back from her preschool Thanksgiving, you know, little performance at night. It was a rainy night here in Richmond, and cut through a business park to get home. She was in the back of the van in her car seat, and at a stoplight where they were doing construction, the stoplight, you know, had the cars stopping further back from an intersection than usual, and the only car at the stoplight, and a man came up with a gun and held it to the window, pointed at my head, and she's in the back seat. You know, at that time, of course, you panic. Is he trying to get my car? Is he trying to take my kid? Is he trying to rob me? Is he trying to kill me? And all, like, you know, all those fleeting thoughts, and I just screamed no and floored it and out into an, you know, intersection with oncoming traffic in both directions. But that event 5 years earlier was something that I had a lot of trouble working through, and was my realization that I could not protect my children in this world. And that was a really, really tough thing. So she and I, and she would have vague, she would say things later. She remembered that incident in her very small 2.5, almost 3-year-old way. But there were things she remembered that incident. She would say things. So we had kind of lived through that, and for me, 9/11, I had a PTSD reaction, and I was very careful with her, knowing how it was affecting me, because she had lived through that first experience with me. So I tried extra careful ways to try to limit her and help her not make that connection that I was really struggling with. I freaked. I panicked. Like I said, I just needed to hug everybody. And Rick, that day, I couldn't get in touch with my parents. My parents were in Atlantic City on 9/11, having fun with friends. And this was, as I said, pre-advent of everybody having a cell phone. They're in a casino, kind of away from the world. And As it turns out, they didn't know until much later in the day of the whole event, and they're minutes away, quite frankly, which freaked me out, and I couldn't get a hold of them. I couldn't get a hold of them till a day and a half later.
No, my.
And I really freaked out about it emotionally, and I knew I in some ways I was overreacting, but it was a PTSD reaction. So for me, I think I represent a group of people who might have had any kind of traumatic event occur in their life prior to 9/11 that brought all that up, you know, right to the forefront. And it wasn't until a few days later that I could see how I was perhaps overreacting to things that I wouldn't have, you know, it was absolutely traumatic, but mine was perhaps exponential because of my prior traumatic event. And I think other people, in whatever ways and whatever life experiences they've had, I imagine had some similar overreactions, and it's hard to work through when all that comes right back to your face. So unfortunately for me, 9/11 solidified the realization that I, you know, A, we're not safe in this world, and there's no guarantee, and B, even though you're a parent, you can't protect your child from the evil in this world sometimes. And that's a really hard thing to accept as a parent. It's a parent. It's one thing, it's me for an adult, if something happens to me. The fact that I can't protect my kid in this world when they're three and when they're, you know, whatever, is was a real difficult thing for me to work through. So.
Jody, it's an amazing story. I appreciate you for telling it here with me today.
You're welcome. I know there are thousands and thousands of stories out there. And, you know, I've watched all the tributes, you know, this morning and all the Facebook posts, and it's a really solemn, sobering event, you know, even 15 years later to see all the images, and you just stop again and you take yourself right back there. And I pray that we're not in a place where we ever face a devastating event like that again, but do fear the state of the world, and hope we do never forget all that emotion that everyone felt. It was horrible, and it was the unification that occurred of everyone was on the bright side of things was a positive that came out of that. And I hope it doesn't take another event like that for us to unify, because I think where we are today, we really need some unity. But anyway, I'm glad to talk to you, Rick, and share my story and along with others today.
Thanks for your time. All right, Jody Power, that was an amazing story. Sunday morning wake-up call, 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Again, that's a story that isn't embedded in New York City or Washington, D.C. or Shanksville, but is on the edge that you don't get to hear. You're not going to see in a documentary on the Discovery Channel today or CNN or one of the other many networks on your TV. But it's here on the radio. I hope you're listening, or you can check out the podcast later on. You can give us a call, 434-284-9470. It is 11:49. We've got one more call out to make. I did contact a friend of mine who's a pilot, and he was a pilot at the time. He had recently left the Air Force and was in the Air Force National Guard and was a commercial pilot, and asked him to participate today, and he wasn't able to. But he wanted to tell me that he knew the co-pilot on the Shanksville flight, United Flight 93. And he called up and asked Andrews Air Force Base, where he was in the National Guard, if they needed him to come back, and they did. But there were so many people there, he said, that there wasn't anything for him to do. And so he went back and he stood around for several days, and then he went back to work for American Airlines, and said the first flight that he flew, he hadn't been there very long. And he went back to work, and the first flight that he flew was a 50-person plane, and there wasn't a single person on it. Not a single person. He said everybody was afraid to fly. And I asked him what had changed, and he said there wasn't anything really different that we didn't already know about, that the cockpit doors had all been fortified, and the air marshal program had been expanded. So the one thing that people may not know is that the pilots never leave the cockpit. In the past, that if there was a problem back in the plane, the pilot may come back and act like the principal, but now they don't come out for anything. There's another call that we have made out to my dad. Dad, are you there?
Good morning, Rick.
Good morning. This is my dad, Wayne. Thanks for taking our call from your number one son.
Good.
So we're talking about 9/11, of course. I told you that ahead of time because I'm asking what you were doing. Where were you and what did you do for the day? How did you take in the news?
I remember really well. I had a fairly early morning court case. And when I left the courthouse, I was going to the doctor's office for a physical, and I heard on the radio that there had been a plane crash into a building in New York, and that was really about all of it.
Hey, speak up a little, Dad.
When I got to the doctor's office, they had a TV playing there, and it showed some smoke coming out of this building, but the sound was off. I really thought that this was just maybe a small private plane that crashed into this building in New York. Really didn't know what happened until I got back to the office, and my secretaries had a TV on, and they were following the news, and that's the first time I knew what really happened. It was probably around 1 in the afternoon.
Did you know, what were your thoughts for the day? Because by that time, the towers would have collapsed by 1 in the afternoon.
Yeah, just as I got to the office, the first tower had collapsed, and you began to realize the significance of what had happened, and that, it was certainly some type of major event. I'm not sure the term terrorist attack was used at that time, but we certainly knew that somebody was, making a major assault on our country.
You got a family?
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, Rick.
You have a family. Are you calling around to? I mean, I've talked to a couple mothers earlier in the hour who, the previous person I talked to, she went and picked her two kids up out of school. I talked to a woman who's a teacher, and she said that the day was full of parents coming to pick their kids up out of school. Did you, call your wife, call your kids? What happened with the family? Did your employees ask to leave work to go get their kids?
No, nobody asked to leave work. All of my children were grown. Obviously, I knew you in Charlottesville. Both your sisters were local. I knew where both of them were. I knew where your mom was. So I did not close anything down or go take any type of panic move. We probably didn't make any huge change until a couple of days later. We had planned to go fly to Phoenix to go on a vacation. And your mom said, I'm not flying anywhere in all this mess. And we canceled that vacation. Eventually drove to a close place to play a little golf.
So let me ask you, so you were traveling a lot, and you've traveled a lot since, is certainly since 9/11, travel seems to have been the biggest change, or am I wrong? Is that not the biggest change in your post 9/11 life? Because you also go to the courts.
Yeah, well, certainly there's been a major change in anybody's flying an airplane or going through any type of, you know, public place. I mean, there was very little what you would call airport security before 9/11 beyond checking your driver's license, maybe when you picked up your ticket to make sure you were the right person, that kind of thing. Certainly there's been total major changes to airport travel. And there have been certainly changes in the court system. Even before 9/11, the federal courts had begun to tighten up security, and the state courts had just begun to initiate some of that. But, of course, it was all accelerated after 9/11. And now it's full court security. You go through, X-ray machines for all of the briefcases and files, and you go through metal detector for metal items, and you have to present identification when you go through, which is very similar to what, the airport does.
All right, well, we're thinking about everything that happened on 9/11 today, and thankful for those of us who are still here to look back. And that includes thankful for my family.
Thankful for mine, too, Rick.
So enjoy your day, and I'll catch up with you later.
Love you. Catch you later. Bye-bye.
All right. Again, we are here on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. This is 94.7 on Sunday, 9/11. Thinking about those of us on the fringes still able to talk about 9/11. Look back on it. Just a few minutes left, 11:57 here. We've talked with a handful of folks able to tell us where they were, what they were doing. How they took in the news and how 9/11 in any way has changed their life, their family, or their current career. Jeff Leonard popped into the studio. He's got a good story to tell. Jeff, I found that that little tip to be pretty interesting. Go ahead, share that.
Good morning. So September 11th was a Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
And there was a complete ground stop, an air stop of all commercial airlines.
9:42, the FAA grounded all civilian flights immediately. International civilian flights were turned back or directed to Canada or Mexico. That's incoming.
Incoming.
But you were on an outgoing.
Well, I was on the first flight out of the country after 9/11. We were heading to Dulles, I think, Friday, maybe the 15th or 16th. Maybe it was Saturday. And we got to the airport. It's at Dulles. We're flying British Airways, and we're like, is this plane taking off in 3 hours? They're like, we don't know. We're told it's going to take off. We just don't know. So when we finally got into the air 3 or 4 hours late, one of your callers earlier talked about the sense of camaraderie and the sense of unity that this event brought on. On those flights to Europe, you're supposed to sleep. They'd leave at 9 o'clock at night. They give you a meal. They put you to bed. But what I remember most about that flight was I went to the back of the plane, the back of the 747, and there was nothing but a bunch of stranded British tourists that were in New York and in Washington, D.C., and just couldn't get home. They were staying at Motel Sixes and on couches and on the floors of the airports for the past week. And they were all in tears because they were devastated for what had happened to us. And, their own personal suffering was there. But they were
You're trying not to be selfish.
Right.
But you just want to go home.
Yeah, exactly. And they were just the most engaged. We are so sorry. And we wound up, my buddy and I were going to Germany, to Bavaria, and we wound up staying on an army base. So we were, less than a week after 9/11, we're staying on an army base, and every time we left the army base in Bad Aibling, I think it was, I remember vividly getting to the army base, and all the local townspeople had made a memorial or a shrine because they couldn't get near the army base because they had locked everything down. But there were tons of flowers and gifts and presents, and every time we went out into the town and they heard us talking, we were Americans. And they felt our struggle, they felt our pain, but they were so generous and kind to us. I don't think today, if we walked the same streets, we would have that that sort of feeling.
I didn't hear all of the homegrown show today. You know, there's a, and I realize we're going over.
Club Del Sabor, 12 o'clock.
But there's a play that I believe is now in Washington, D.C., about how one of the flights coming into the United States was stopped in Canada, in Newfoundland, in Gander, I believe, and how this all these people in this small city of Gander put up all these folks and housed them and fed them and everything.
That's
and
one of the things that
wonderful
that,
play.
One of the stories that isn't that is just so perfect for humanity is that this tiny airport, and I've read the story several times in on the east northeast coast of Canada. That's your country, Dan. It's a tiny airport, but yet they were landing giants. All inbound 747s from Europe were landing there. So people, you know, you're on an Air France, you know, 747, and you're coming across the, and you're expecting to go to New York or Boston or Charlotte or wherever. All of a sudden, they're saying we're touching down in Canada, and then they were landing, and they were seeing other giant 747s at this tiny airport. They had no place to put. They were literally putting them on the side of the runways. And not knowing what to do with all these people. And they were panicked, so the small community came together and housed every one of those people and made those people stay
a lot better than it would have been. 3 or 4 days. And, you know, I'm a big dude. And somebody there's got clothes for me.
And they've got kids, and they need diapers and food. And, you know,
and they kept them on, according to the article I read or heard or saw, They were on the plane for like 24 hours before they even let them off the planes, because they realized, okay, it's going to happen for a lot longer than it is. And then they let them off the planes, and these people in the city had like an entire hangar full of food and everything all lined up. And, you know,
imagine you're the Canadian government. But what would the U.S. government do in that situation when all of a sudden you've got people that don't have entrance visas?
They'd say, sleep in the terminal.
Yeah, they don't know who you are. You have to create a mini prison for all these people because they're not going to clear customs because, you know, there's a reason the U.S. didn't want them in, because they didn't know what was on those flights. So now the Canadian in this eastern, what's the eastern province up there?
Well, it was in Newfoundland. Yeah, that's its own province.
Newfoundland.
So what are they're not prepared for any of this. They might be now, but yeah, there's, you know, I'm glad that we're having this because this is such a traumatic experience, but to end it with all the sort of positive things that came out of it, I think humanity came out as a winner from all this, just because of all the positive things that did come of it. And it was an awful and tragic event, and it'll last in memory. I mean, kids 2,000 years will be hearing about this, but what might get lost is the people that were able to rally around to make that miserable situation a touch more bearable, so that you could get through it just one inch easier.
Well, I feel like that in my brain and in many people's brains, and certainly during this hour, the focus was about New York City and the towers. But we can't be shy about reminding people that a plane crashed in the Pentagon, and that a plane that many people believe was designated to crash in the Capitol or in the White House went down in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and that those people and those families and the people on, you know, other circles around those people and those, you know, those involved in those planes can't be forgotten. It wasn't just the towers, although those are the largest images with the largest number of people. And it's an important day. It's a difficult day. And there are hundreds of thousands of stories that go along with it. And there always will be. And, you know, sometimes there are people whose stories need to be told or who are willing to tell those stories, along with those who would rather not. And I'm glad that we have the opportunity to do that here at WPVC.
Well, thank you. And you know, as time goes on, hopefully some of these people will be able to tell their stories. I mean, some of the people you reached out to clearly didn't want to. But for our benefit and for theirs, I hope a time comes when they are able to sort of unburden their souls for what had happened. It's just trauma. It is absolute trauma. And the only way to sort of help with that is to process it.
All right, so we're going to finish up here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Sean McCord will be next here next Sunday. I'll be back in 2 weeks. Do your best with 9/11. Enjoy it, process it, in whatever way works best for you, your family, your friends.
This has been the Sunday Morning 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the wake-up call, only on WPVC LP Charlottesville.